Welcome to the Intro Biology Podcast. Today we'll be discussing microscopy. And we'll begin by describing two figures who were instrumental in beginning the fields of microscopy that certainly have benefited us today. The first is named Robert Hooke, who lived from 1635 to 1703. And he was one of the first scientists to view living organisms through a microscope. And the living organisms that he was looking at were plant cells from cork taken from the bark of a tree. And when they were sliced very thin, he could view the individual cells underneath of his microscope. And he published his work in a publication called Micrographia in the year 1665. The next individual we'll talk about is Antony van Leeuwenhoek, who lived from 1632 to 1723, so around the same time as Robert Hooke. And he is the first scientist who viewed microorganisms with a microscope. So not just individual cells from living organisms, but individual organisms that were microscopic. And he called these strange small organisms animalcules, the combination of the word animal and molecules, and also wee little beasties for how ferocious some of them looked underneath of a microscope. He took these samples from things like rainwater, where he could even see small eukaryotic organisms in his sample. And he's often called the father of microbiology. So now to discuss a few terms that are important for the discussion of microscopy. The first is magnification, which is simply a ratio of image size to actual size. So if someone says that an image is 10x, that means that it's 10 times the size of the original image, at least the region of the image that you're looking at. The next term is resolution, which is sometimes more simply referred to as clarity, but technically it is the minimum distance two points must be separated and still be distinguished as separate points. So for example, if the resolution of a camera was 1 millimeter, just an arbitrary number, it means that for that camera to tell that two points are two distinct points and not one point, the points have to be at least 1 millimeter apart. The better the resolution means the smaller the distance between two points must be in order to tell them as being separate. And the third term we'll introduce is contrast, which is the difference in brightness between light and dark spots. So when you look at an image and there are light regions and dark regions, the difference between those two regions is what we call contrast. And in microscopy and biology, usually you can enhance contrast by adding stains or dyes that will bind to some areas more strongly than others, or to some areas and not at all to other areas. And that difference between stained and unstained helps improve this principle of contrast. Light microscopes, which is a rather broad term to describe microscopes, are optical instruments with lenses that refract or bend visible light to magnify images of specimens. And there are many types of microscopes that use light to do this. And we'll describe each of them very briefly just so that you have a general sense of what they are should you read literature and see or hear that they use certain microscopy techniques. The first is bright field, which refers to light passing through a specimen and being absorbed by the specimen and creating contrast. So you can imagine if you're looking at a cell, light passes through the cell. In regions that are very dense, that light will be absorbed. In regions that are less dense, that light will pass through freely, and then the detector on such a microscope, you could see the differences between the light that was absorbed and is now no longer being caught by the detector and the light that passed through freely because there was nothing in its way, and that contrast is what allows you to see your specimen. And this, like I mentioned previously, can be aided by dyes that bind to some cells or some regions of cells and not others. The second type of microscopy is phase contrast microscopy, and this amplifies differences in density in a sample to enhance contrast, and we'll just leave it simply there as a way of amplifying differences in density. Differential interference contrast microscopy uses polarized light to do this essentially even further, to further enhance the contrast by exaggerating the densities within a specimen. Fluorescence microscopy, now we're moving to something slightly different. It actually uses light of a certain wavelength to illuminate the specimen and then detect the light that's emitted. So light of a shorter wavelength is delivered to the specimen, and then light of a longer wavelength is emitted by the specimen and caught by detectors. Usually this type of microscopy involves the addition of fluorescent dyes or labels. So these can be dyes that are just added to a sample and bind in certain regions, or even genetically tagging, for example, a protein of interest with a fluorescent protein that can be visualized using fluorescence microscopy. Confocal microscopy is a type of fluorescence microscopy that uses a pinhole to block out out-of-focus light and therefore increase the contrast and resolution of the image. It essentially narrows in on the region that you're looking at. Deconvolution is a computational process where multiple microscope images are brought together and processed to increase the overall contrast and resolution of the final image. And then the last type that we'll talk about is called super-resolution microscopy. And this is quite a complicated method, but essentially allows us to view things at even higher resolutions than math and physics would tell us were possible. And in essence, this works by using a combination of lasers that can really narrow down and refine the area of the image that you're looking at. And by reducing the size of the image that you're exciting with light, you can increase the resolution of the image that you see. Again, just a brief introduction to some of those methods should you hear them come up in literature that you may read. All of those methods fall under the class of light microscopy. They use light, either visible light across the entire spectrum or just a specific wavelength of light, but in essence, they're still using light. Another type of microscopy that's often used in biology is called electron microscopy. And as you might guess, this type of microscopy uses electrons instead of light. And the principle here is that the resolution of an image is related to the wavelength of light or energy that you use. The shorter the wavelength of energy, the better the resolution. Light, especially in the visible spectrum, has a certain wavelength, and so you can achieve only a certain resolution using that wavelength. Electrons, even though we think of them as matter, are energy with a wavelength that is shorter than the visible light that we use in light microscopy, and so with that shorter wavelength, you get higher resolution. That's why those are beneficial. So electron microscopes are a microscope that uses magnets to focus an electron beam on or through a specimen, and the resolution is usually at least 100 times greater than that of normal light microscopy. And there are two main types of electron microscopy for our purposes. The first is called scanning electron microscopy, or SEM, and it uses an electron beam to scan the surface of a sample that's usually coated with metal ions, and then you're able to study how those electrons bounce off the surface, off of those metal atoms, and view essentially the topography or the surface of the sample that you're looking at. The second type of electron microscopy is called transmission electron microscopy, or TEM, and instead of bouncing electrons off the surface of a sample, this passes electrons through a sample, specifically a very thin section of a sample that can be stained with metal atoms as well, and this usually is used to study internal structures of cells, whereas scanning electron microscopy is used to look at maybe whole cells or tissues. Transmission electron microscopy actually looks inside of cells, usually at the structures within them, like organelles. Just one more topic to discuss here that's not quite microscopy, but it has to do with how we can view and separate cells. It's called cell fractionation. And this is a process that disrupts a cell and separates it by its parts using centrifugation at successively higher and higher speeds. So for example, if you wanted to isolate a particular organelle from a sample, you would break open the cells. You would then centrifuge them by spinning them around a central axis. And the higher you spin them, the faster you spin them, the smaller the things that will sink to the bottom of the tube. And then conversely, the slower you spin them, only the heavier things will fall from the tube. So for example, if you first spin the tube at a low speed, you might pellet large things like the nucleus. And then if you move a little bit faster, you might pellet the mitochondria that are a little bit bigger than that. And if you go really fast, you can even pellet ribosomes. And again, this is just a method that allows you to separate individual components of cells just using centrifugation. Just to summarize what we've talked about in this episode, microscopy uses different sources of light, whether they be light, like visible spectrum light, or electrons, to enlarge objects so they can be detected by the human eye or by some scientific piece of equipment. Light microscopy uses light to magnify the images, and this can be enhanced by dyes and stains and different technological modifications like we talked about, the combination of lasers or pinholes. Electron microscopes uses electrons to magnify images. Scanning electron microscopy, or SEM, scans the surface of a sample, while transmission electron microscopy, TEM, passes electrons through and allows you to see inside of a sample. And finally, cell fractionation can separate components of cells by centrifuging or spinning them at different speeds for different lengths of time.